The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast. Here on CBS Sports, that's Bud Elliott. I'm Chip Patterson. Got a lot to get to in a very interesting week, not just within college football, but with all of college sports. More on that in just a little bit. The early entry deadline for the NFL draft was on Monday. Now, there is a little bit of a grace window, but for the most part, those who have declared, we believe that to be the list. We have our underclassmen draft trackers up. You can find your favorite ones. Of course, we're always going to direct you to 24/7 Sports and CBSSports.com for all the latest. We've had some analysis on CBS Sports all during the week, and we are excited to sort of go through this roster reset period. The transfer portal continues to spin, and we are going to do that. But we really believe that here at the Cover 3 Podcast, we are better than anybody else in the business at being able to help you understand the way that these teams are constructed, holes, needs, and the ways that coaches go about filling them. So, Bud, you know, we very excited to dig into this and more as we continue to, you know, see in an era unlike anything else of player movement, the way that these things are coming together, winners and losers, who ended up being on top. I wonder, as you were just spending some time with many of the coaches at college football, you know, how much, you know, draft declaration sweats do you think the average, like if I was to ask you to take all of the coaches that you've been speaking with here in recent weeks, how much of that do you think comes as a surprise? How much of it do you think is something that they sweat? You know, like how much concern do you think it has for some of these coaches when it comes to these decisions that we've seen, not just over the last couple weeks, but really over the last month or so?
I would say the average staff probably has, I don't know, one to two. And that's not necessarily always, hey, I really hope this guy who should go to the NFL decides to come back. I'm actually shooting a video on this for 24/7 Sports tomorrow after we get done doing two Cover 3 Podcasts. But sometimes guys go pro for other reasons as well, right? Sometimes you run out of classes you can pass, which is a reality of the sport that we play in college football, where you have to have the college part of college football, even if it's nominally. At a certain point, you have to take classes that involve your major. And sometimes the reading load is just too high for some of these guys who have sort of been kind of, you know, shepherded through some of their easier
general
classes.
Like the general studies majors and
right.
You know, you get a lot of 100, 200, 300s across the board, fulfill everything you need to do.
And sometimes these guys, they have family situations where they have to go. Like, could they make more money if they waited a year? Yes. But for them, the prospect of getting out, getting drafted or not, but at least getting a shot to be on a practice squad where you can make some pretty good money if you can act like a professional and be a good practice squad guy. I think they make like 70 something. You know, that's a real lure, which is totally understandable in some circumstances. So I would say the sweat per team is probably greater than people realize, because a lot of people think, oh, it's this, you know, Sunbelt team. They're not going to have anybody who seriously should go pro. Should go pro meaning get drafted? I agree. Should go pro meaning considering all their family situations? I think there's probably more than people realize, which also plays into NIL, because I think we're going to see quite a bit of new NIL deals announced in the coming months for guys who were maybe fringe draft prospects who should come back and just need a little enticement to go ahead and stay on the team. Of course, that's not what NIL is supposed to be used for. It's only, Chip, for their marketing value to these great advertisers that they're securing. But yeah, I think NIL is a nice talent retaining tool.
Yes, I was just, you know, I introduced the topic. I'm sorry to spring it on you. Sometimes it leads to really good conversations.
No, I've been thinking about
it. I like
it.
That. But I think that if a head coach is doing his job, he should have a pretty good read on his players. He should have a pretty good beat on, you know, their academic situation, their family situation, you know, what their goals are, how they would view an opportunity to go and be a practice squad player versus how they would view, you know, I imagine myself as a NFL draft pick or a day one, day two NFL draft pick. We're going to talk about some players here in this episode that are coming back, and the messaging that they're giving is, you know, I want to improve. I know there's these areas of my game that are going to be able to make me more profitable as soon as I go pro, pretty much right off the jump. First, a little bit of housekeeping situation, for the listeners. You mentioned we've got two podcasts that we're recording on Thursday. One of them will be live. 11 a.m. Thursday. It is going to be a mailbag episode, so make sure that you get your mailbag questions in. How do you do that? 5-star review, and in that review, put your mailbag question. We'll be knocking out mailbag live, and if you want to come and join it, you know, the audience participation is something that we haven't always had in our mailbag episodes, but I think it's something that we're very much entertaining here in the off season. So come and join us for a mailbag live Thursday, 11 a.m. Then later, you will be recording a conversation with Matt Brown, and like he is at the, I'll go ahead and let's check it. He's at the NCAA convention. And what are some of the things that listeners can expect from that show, which I think we're going to post on Friday morning, first thing for the audio listeners and as well on the YouTube channel.
Yeah. So the conversation with Matt, I think it's going to be really fun. There's a lot of sort of technical things the NCAA does, rules they want to get proposed or rules they want to get passed. Maybe have a vote to give more power to the P5 commissioners and a little bit less to the top level NCAA leadership. We'll see how that thing goes down. And he's there talking, much like I did at the coaches convention, talking to the coaches. He's there talking to administrators and conference commissioners, athletic directors, people of that ilk, and seeing what they see as the major issues for this sport. I'm interested to ask him, hey, like, what are they going to bitch about and what are they going to actually be able to get past? Which is a similar question that I asked to a lot of the coaches there in San Antonio. And of course, the differences on those things are oftentimes pretty substantial. So I think it's going to be a fun conversation. I'm sure he'll be able to tell us about some stuff that they really want to get past, but maybe don't have the votes. And then we'll get down to the nitty gritty and say, like, what changes can we really see coming to the sport in the next year?
Big picture stuff. I am glad that we have him because I can't really wrap my mind around it right now. You know, I'm jumping on CBS Sports HQ, firing off college hoops winners 4-1 yesterday on my there little trip. So like, you know, I'm already juggling a lot right now. The idea of big picture NCAA legislation, a new constitution and those things. I'm very thankful that we've got our friends and our resources to be able to bring to you the listeners, because I'm more than happy to admit that it's some depth that I just can't reach right now, but it is important and it absolutely is going to shape the future of college athletics. Over the weekend, we started, and really into this week, we've seen a lot of transfer portal buzz. And when we get everything settled a little bit, we will also be looking at some of the winners and losers of the transfer portal, the way that things are looking heading into spring practice. But if there's a team that needed, like capital N needed, some transfer portal help, it is Brian Kelly's LSU Tigers. So a few that have stood out to me. We saw Noah Cain, you know, flashed as a freshman at Penn State, suffered that injury, season-ending injury right at the beginning of the 2020 season that never really settled in the 2021 season, but clearly somebody with a very high ceiling. He committed to LSU over the weekend. They brought in defensive back Greg Brooks, who I think is going to be able to help a secondary that, based on my count, only has like 2 scholarship players right now, still around from last year's team. And then on Tuesday, we got Missouri defensive tackle Makai Wingo. I know that's not all, but when I'm looking at teams that needed action on the transfer portal and have been creating headlines, it certainly looks like LSU is one.
I think LSU has done a really nice job over the last couple of days. They are currently our number one transfer portal team on the 24/7 Sports transfer portal team rankings. Noah Cain, I like Noah Cain. I mean, like, I'm biased here. I covered him at IMG when he was coming up. He's a kid, you know, from Louisiana, and the question on him was always speed, and then he got hurt. So I'm sure he, you know, probably lost a little bit more, but he's a guy who will pass pro. He can catch the ball a little bit. I think he can still be a tough runner for you between the tackles. If he regains some of that explosiveness, then LSU maybe found the gem. Obviously, with the guys that Penn State have signed at running back, I don't think he was going to be able to get much playing time there in Happy Valley. Nice job on the offensive line as well with Miles Frazier. And then, the kid from ETSU, Tremont Shorts that they took. I think they're doing a decent job rebuilding that. Secondary is still a concern there, obviously, because they've lost several key players to the draft / the transfer portal. But getting Mekhi Wingo, as you mentioned as well, from Missouri, who could be a guy who's a nice penetrator for you, a little bit undersized defensive lineman. I know we have a 94 grade on him in the transfer portal, which makes him one of the top transfers who was available on the market. I also like this kid, Wes Weeks. We only put 3 stars on him, but I know a lot of personnel guys who thought very highly of Wes Weeks, and he could be a really good linebacker for them as well, I think. So, yeah, LSU, nice job in the transfer portal over the last week, and man, their fans needed it because they were flipping out. What is Brian Kelly doing? We're not getting anybody in the transfer portal in the last week. They're like, boom, watch this.
Is it fair to say that LSU, I'm going to have lowered expectations for LSU based on what LSU's ceiling is, but I still have this very admittedly lazy high floor evaluation where I just think it's impossible for us to see a bottom fallout 4-8, 5-7 kind of scenario in Brian Kelly year one. So even as we face all these personnel challenges, when the transfer portal news continues to just stack up, it's not that I'm celebrating it, but I'm at least saying it's LSU. It's Brian Kelly. Like they are going to figure out a way to be sustainable, I guess I could say. And even if you have on paper all these personnel issues, there's just so much confidence that we are not going to see a team that is going to struggle week in and week out, even in the hyper-competitive SEC.
I think I agree with you. I mean, I don't know that they're going to compete for the West next year. I don't think they're going to finish last in the West. Before this week, I kind of thought they might have.
Because
of the pieces that they were losing. But the timing when you bring in guys, it doesn't really matter as long as you get them in. And especially if you get them in for spring, it's a nice bonus. But their roster looks a heck of a lot better. I mean, how many of these guys that they're taking in the portal are going to start? I mean, they've signed, 11 transfer portal guys?
Half.
Over under of 6.5, probably,
yeah.
I would think.
And more to come, too.
Most likely, yeah. I think they have room for a couple more.
I think they've got to get one of those cornerback spots locked down. Demarius McGee, I guess, is cornerback number one. And I don't know what you read on him. He's 6'1", 190, 4-star prospect, probably pretty good, but Brooks is probably more of the nickel with Flott leaving and transferring out. So I guess Brooks is either a safety or a nickel.
They also lost McGlothern, who transferred, I believe, to Arkansas. And I like Dwight. I mean, I know he had some misses, but he also had some really good plays for them. He was somebody who I thought kept playing hard down the stretch. So that was kind of one of the reasons why entering, leaving the convention, I was not super high on LSU. And over the last week or so, that the guys they've taken have improved my mood on them.
Jaleel Billingsley, there was a whole flood of Alabama announcements that all came out on Sunday or Saturday. It was Sunday. Jaleel Billingsley transferring to Texas, I think, being the most notable. Also, Paul Tyson transferring to Arizona State. That would be Bear Bryant's great-grandson, for those who remember those references from throughout the season. Billingsley, the one that sort of takes the headline for me, and easy connection to understand why it happened with Steve Sarkisian and also Jeff Banks having that relationship with Billingsley going back to their time at Alabama. But I wonder if you look at Billingsley as someone who is going to not only land at Texas and be able to answer a need for them, which I agree that the tight end position could use someone of Billingsley's caliber, but do you expect for him to be a real game changer for the Longhorns and at the Big 12 level?
I mean, if he couldn't fit in culturally at Bama, do we think Texas culture is at a spot where he's going to be a fit? I don't know, man. I mean, he was in the doghouse how many times?
I know. I've got just the disappointment.
I've always had doubts on him for that reason. Even back to some of the effort that I saw in some of the recruiting camps.
So he came on strong.
I was surprised he was as good as he was in 2020 based on what I saw before I started working for 24/7 Sports at some of the camps, like the effort level, some of the attitude stuff I just didn't love. And that's not always an indicator of how the player is going to be, because again, they're kids, right? It wasn't a positive indicator. It doesn't doom you if, to me, it looks like you're kind of dogging it out there. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, wow, I'm surprised that they were able to get production out of that guy that quickly based on what I saw out of him in 2019 at camps. However, it seems like some issues reemerged there at Bama. I'll go back to this quote from Nick Saban in April of 2021. Quote, "I don't think our good players are going to be leaving to the portal," he said. "But I think we'll be able to get some good players to join us when we have room to do that."
So he's saying anybody who's leaving, not a good player.
Now, this is not specifically about Billingsley. Obviously, this is a year before, or, you know, 9 months ago. But, you know, I think he's pretty consistent in his comments that we'll see how the guys who leave Bama do elsewhere.
Jerome Ford was great for Cincinnati.
He was.
Drew Sanders landed at Arkansas.
I think that's a pretty good get for them. With Chris Allen coming back, Chris Allen did come back for Alabama, right?
Correct.
Yeah. I think that's a good get.
Also, Jordan Battle. Actually, we don't need to tease that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
how you got Alabama and as a winner and a loser? I think that Billingsley. So you mentioned 2020. It was back half of the season. He got
his coordinator is still matched up, right? Because remember who coordinated that 2020 Bama team? Like, if you want to play the devil's advocate here, it's Sark was a guy who used him very effectively. Mm-hmm. And now Sark likes using him. And we think Texas receivers are going to be pretty nasty this year. He should get a lot of one-on-one looks.
They need middle of the field help.
Yeah. Maybe Sark believes. And well, there's no maybe. Clearly, Sark believes that this is worth the risk because he extended the scholarship. And he believes you can use him in that system. If things go well, I think maybe it could snowball and go well. But what if they start losing a couple games? What if he has some games where he's not getting targeted as much? How does he react, right? Does he give you good effort on blocking? I don't know. I'm skeptical.
Yeah, it was all back half of the season. He got hot. Sark obviously was dialing up some good plays for him, caught a couple touchdowns, was very much a part of that 2020 offense. Bill O'Brien comes in. My brain goes, hey, pro style guy is going to find ways to get this tight end all the looks that, you know, he could possibly have. It's going to be an explosion season for him. As you mentioned, he ends up getting passed by Cameron Latu as really that tight end number one position. And when he was called on this season, it has been disappointing at times. So
how often does Nick call a guy out like publicly? I mean, it's not that often. He usually keeps most of the discipline stuff in house, but he was not shy of talking about what Billingsley needed to do to be an effective player for them this year in the preseason. Remember? It was early on.
I do not remember. I'm going to trust your reference on that, but it is infrequent that he's going to make anything other than a vague reference to we've got some guys that blah, 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 blah. But, you know, Billingsley was targeted by us and many others as somebody who could be a breakout player. So it's always interesting when our dumb little brains figure out who's going to have the explosive season. And then, you know, head coach comes in there and he's like, oh yeah, I understand that y'all think this guy's going to have a huge season, but I'm with him all the time. I see him in practice. I see him, you know, going through all these other team activities and I don't think he's got it, or I don't think this is going to be it, or he needs to fix these things if he's going to be this player that y'all are cracking him up to be.
Exactly. I think that's right.
Hunter Johnson's going back to Clemson, Chuba Purdy to Nebraska. What, anything else from the transfer portal before we hit the break and get into some NFL draft declaration talk?
I mean, I know Oklahoma was in on the Chuba Purdy thing too, which surprised me when I got tipped that they were interested. I think a change of scenery could benefit Chuba Purdy, but clearly Oklahoma was targeting him as a backup or as maybe a future guy down the line. Nebraska did not get the same quality of other quarterback. It took Casey Thompson out of Texas that Oklahoma has so far. But I still imagine that that is sort of a reset thing there for Purdy, and that Nebraska would likely be targeting Thompson to start. If we recall, FSU staff knew that Jordan Travis was not going to play in that game against, I'm trying to think who this was against. It might've been NC State, because he had an illness. And Purdy dipped out knowing that he could play in the game potentially, but he wasn't going to start because Mackenzie Milton, who is gimpy as heck still, like obviously, you know, that tragic injury, they were going to start Mackenzie Milton over him. And he knew that. So I think that is a reflection on where Purdy is at this point in his career. He was a highly rated recruit and still has some physical talents. He also really struggled with injuries himself. He had the broken collarbone, and then they had to go in, I believe, and do a second procedure on that collarbone, which I believe hampered his progress. So a clean restart somewhere else probably makes some sense, and I hope the kid does well. But I would expect that Casey Thompson is the starter there for Nebraska, and maybe Purdy is somebody, a bit of a reclamation project, maybe down the line can work out for the Cornhuskers.
Coming up on the other side, the NFL draft early entry deadline has passed. Let's get into which programs got a little bit of boost, which programs now have some big time concerns. NFL draft deadline, winners and losers, next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Okay, so we both put together our lists. Do you want to tackle teams with ones that we both have, or do you want to start with losers, winners? Chef's choice here.
Let's go. Let's just go winners and start positive, and then we can kind of go negative. I do want to ask you a couple questions of kind of how you constructed your list, because this year is the first year that it really felt different to me. In looking at some of these lists, some of these lists have guys who were COVID or super seniors rather, who could be super seniors who have elected not to use that extra year of eligibility. And I think more sites out there decided to not include folks like that. So it's kind of guys you're losing to the draft, but I think specifically here, the point of this episode is more guys you're losing to the draft early, right? So Hutchinson at Michigan could have come back, but clearly has a brain, so he's not going to do that. And the rest of the Big Ten is ever so grateful for him deciding to do as such. I'm counting like just guys who were like legit underclassmen in mind. I assume you're doing the same.
Yeah. I mean, you could be a 4-year player, but if your bio says junior beside it,
okay, right,
then I consider you the traditional NFL draft underclassman. Like before, we had the weaponization of the red shirt, you know, before we've had the COVID year, traditionally it is the underclassmen in the NFL draft were juniors, and then the regular entries were seniors in the previous college football season. Of course, now we've got them as redshirt sophomores. You know, we've got the juniors, the redshirt juniors. But I still think that all of those, to me, by my definition, still fit the underclassmen. To your point, Aiden Hutchinson is classified by Michigan as a senior. Therefore, I did not consider him an underclassman, even if he still had another year of eligibility.
The other thing I wanted to point out here is I try to do this a little bit with some relativity on it. So you could list Bama and Georgia as a loser every single year that because they recruit so well and they send so many guys to the NFL. So I kind of think of it as like, how much are you losing relative to your team and relative to like how good you normally are, right? To find programs that are really going to be affected in one way or another compared to their sort of normal baseline, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've got Georgia as a winner.
Okay, cool.
Let's go ahead and like jump into it because
yeah.
I think that right off the bat, the one player who stands out as like you are going to come back next season and we are going to look at you potentially as a star, not only because of what you did, but just because of you know the way that we are talking about the Georgia defense and the way that we talked about N'Kobe Dean, Nolan Smith, who's an outside linebacker, just like N'Kobe Dean, who finished in the top five in tackles for loss, who had a monster game against Michigan, who has been a top five-star prospect, you know, all the way through. The talent's been through the roof. Nolan Smith, after playing with the team for a couple years, is coming back for a true senior season instead of joining N'Kobe Dean, instead of joining Zamir White, instead of joining the rest of that Georgia group that did decide to enter early. He's back. Chris Smith is back. I think that Georgia being able to get those high quality players when otherwise you're seeing so much exodus. Quay Walker was a senior. Jordan Davis was a senior. Devontae Wyatt was a senior. To have this not be a total exodus, man, that kind of seems like a little bit of a win for the Bulldogs.
I agree. I had them on my list as like a slight winner, just relative to who could have gone pro. Because they have some of those guys coming back who you mentioned, who if they did go pro, like they could get drafted just based on how they're going to test. Georgia has pretty good strength conditioning program, obviously, and those guys are going to test very well, I think, whenever they do go to the combine. So I think it makes sense to have them as a winner. Who else you got, Chip?
Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, you get some guys back. You get Allen back. Remember, he was very highly thought of and had that sack fumble in the opening game against Miami before he got hurt.
Jordan Battle is back.
Battle.
I think that's another one that's very, very significant. So here, how did you classify? Let's see, one, two. Yeah, Henry Toto.
So he was not great for them this year, I would say. Like Georgia picked on him pretty hard. They tried to avoid Christian Harris where they could, and they really targeted Toto. And I tweeted like, hey, if we're playing find the duck, sometimes you find the duck in the run game, and the duck was Toto in that game. They blasted him. Bama, of course, part of that's Bama's D-line didn't always keep some of those Georgia offensive linemen off him. But I think it's better, like he started for you, which is probably a reflection on who else you have in your linebacker room right now that you feel good about. Getting a guy back who was one of the few dudes you actually used a spot on in the transfer portal in the 2021 signing class, I think that has to be counted as a win. Clearly, they believe in the guy, and there's nothing that says he can't improve. He should be one of their better linebackers this year coming back if he can kind of make a jump.
I don't know if he's going to be one of their better linebackers, but that's somebody who would have tested well, right?
I think so. But I mean, I don't know, man. I thought he was better than how he played this year. Like I think him coming back is good on the experience level. And also because he was starting for you, which means you didn't feel like the guys behind him were better. It's not like Saban is scared to throw in true freshmen and start them. If he likes him. So I just think the experience factor there, I don't know, man. I wasn't in love with what he did this year.
So Alabama cuts the other way. You know, there is some loser to it, which is kind of fun about these programs that do have top stars coming back because, You also are John Mechie. I have as classified as an underclassman. I've got Jameson Williams classified as an underclassman, him being a junior this past season. You lose both Evan Neal on one side, underclassman, but then Chris Owens is not an underclassman. He expired his eligibility, but now we've got two tackles to replace. We've got two wide receivers to replace. There is a little bit of, okay. I mean, Bryce Young can fix everything we hope. And J.C. Latham, got a little bit of work in, was mostly special teams, but then because of injury, got to play a little bit, I believe, in the Cotton Bowl. We think that Tommy Brockermeyer, who didn't end up seeing the field, is going to be able to live up to that, top six overall prospect. Like, there is talent at a lot of these spots, but Alabama's not a loser. But I at least wanted to flag that offensive side of the ball as something that could be very interesting to watch, where the Heisman Trophy winner from 2021 can certainly solve a lot of your problems. But when we're talking about the margins for Alabama and the expectations that we have, there's a lot of, we need these guys to step up either at the wide receiver position or along the offensive line.
When did they get Jameson Williams? In May, right? That was post-spring?
Mm-hmm.
If you're Bama, I don't think Bama's going to be done here in the portal, by the way. Like, I think they're going to survey what they have in spring, see how they look, and then probably go pluck a guy or two.
Must be nice. Must be really, really nice. Who else is on your winners list?
Okay, so I have a couple here. I actually think Oregon. This is kind of that combo thing of they did have some guys who were draft eligible to come back. I think they have four starters back on the offensive line, which could help them out quite a bit. You lose Kayvon Thibodeau, which is a loss. But to me, it's more of like a theoretical loss from what they could have had, because he was injured quite a bit in his career there at Oregon. And when he was on the field, he was an impact guy, but they didn't lose quite as many impact guys as I thought they potentially could have lost. And in looking at their roster, I'm actually kind of bullish on this Oregon team entering the 2022 season. And I had Tennessee. Hendon Hooker, look, my thoughts on that Baylor style offense that they run. It's basically a cheat code in college football, but he is good at running that offense. And he missed, I think, part of camp or whatever, and there's a reason why they didn't start him over Joe Milton. But once he got in there, that was a very good offense, both in terms of raw numbers and in terms of like opponent-adjusted, pace-adjusted stuff. They were still really efficient. You get Tillman back. You get the offensive lineman Calvin back. They got some dudes there to where that could be a team. And could they finish second in the East?
Yeah. Yes. I'm willing to entertain – 3-4 teams for that second in the East position.
Are you willing to entertain anybody else for first?
No.
What if they start Stetson Bennett again?
No.
I don't know. If they start Stetson Bennett, let's save that conversation for when everybody else is here.
I've got Iowa. Jack Campbell, the nation's leading tackler, decided that he's going to return. They also bring back Riley Moss, who is one of the best cornerbacks in the entire country. You lose Tyler Goodson, which is significant, and very, very good running back for them. But for you to be able to retain two just super, super productive and reliable parts of the back half of that Iowa defense, defensive coordinator Phil Parker has got to feel joyed that he at least can trust exactly what's going to happen from those two stars. So I wanted to make sure we highlight Iowa for picking up some draft deadline wins. And Ike Ekwonu might be a top 10 pick, but NC State's got a lot back. And again, this is another situation where I don't think anybody was going to be making the kind of arguments for, Devin Carter or Thayer Thomas or like Peyton Wilson coming off an injury that, or Drake Thomas. Like I don't think that any of these individual players are going to necessarily be targeted as a first or second round NFL draft pick, but the strength and conditioning program that Thunder Dan runs in Raleigh is top notch. And you can just see by the linemen that they've been putting out right now. And so Devin Leary also announces that he's going to come back. I mentioned Peyton Wilson earlier. We thought he could be an All-American this year, had that injury very, very early on. He's going to be back. So they've got difference makers kind of at all the different positions, all the different position groups. They do lose both of their running backs, Ricky Person Jr. and Bam Knight, but But overall, I look at NC State as a plus value in terms of what could have been, like the relativity that you talk about. There were players who probably could have gone, tested well, been day three draft picks, and decided that they were going to just go ahead and wrap up their college careers. To have all of them or many of them coming back, I think is notable and something that's good for the Wolfpack in 22.
For sure. So I am proud. Like, I was NC State guy preseason for 2021. I agree that they deserve to be a winner on this list. Also, I was looking at some of the stuff Jared Lee did. I believe that NC State led the Power Five in win probability lost by making the wrong fourth down decision. So if you want to know, like, damn, how did they underperform their talent as far as their record somewhat, which I think they kind of did by like a game. That was one of the reasons why. So just some really horrendous punting and field goal decisions there by Doran in some of those close games. So maybe they get that fixed. Could I make an argument that losing the running backs will help them be better because they'll stop trying to run the ball so damn much and actually sling it around a little bit?
When all of their success rates and EPAs are so much better when they're not just banging their head against. See, I just got to tell you, it's lovable. It is going all the way in on the hand in the dirt ideology. Like, if you were really going to preach that everywhere, then establish the run, even when it's not successful, is right up there with some real old school hard hat mentality.
Yeah, which is, it didn't hurt you as much back when everybody was doing it. But now that people are realizing passing is more efficient if you're good at it, and I do think they have a quarterback who's probably going to get drafted. Not this year, obviously, because he's coming back. But, yeah, you got to,
So you're just already staking your claim. He's like, I don't trust.
I am not buying them preseason 2 years in a row.
Okay.
Probably. I guess, look, you got to see the price, right? It's always team and price. But, I think – this year was probably the year to jump on those guys for their win total, especially because ESPN put them eighth in the preseason. So we may see a win total of like nine-ish, and I'm like, I'm not going to be betting over on that. I have two that I had solidly in the winners column, and then now I think I'm probably just going to move them to the neutral column if I can share.
All right.
Boston College.
Because you get Dracovic.
You get Dracovic back, you get Flowers back, but they did lose Vrabel to the draft. So kind of a loss there, I think. So slight winner that you get your Kovic back. I think it's a smart move on his part to come back, actually, because you can get some more tape. And I think they're a well-coached team.
And doing it with Flowers. I mean, that's just like that's the connection right there.
The other one I had in the likely winners column was UCLA. But then Justin Fry, the offensive line coach, left for Ohio State to be reunited with Ryan Day, and then shortly after that, Sean Ryan, who arguably the best player on their team, their starting tackle, he did go ahead and declare for the draft. So I kind of moved them from winner to neutral. They do get DTR back. If you want to call that a win, fine.
Yikes.
I think it's very evident what they feel about him because they went out and got Dylan Gabriel for several hours.
I've got UCLA. My note says UCLA is interesting. Could be winner, could be loser. You lose Kyle Phillips and Greg Dulcich. Greg Dulcich was probably your best pass catcher. Kyle Phillips, obviously former five-star recruit. You imagine, high ceiling. But you get DTR back. So what is the wash there? It's probably a little bit more neutral. What's your read on USC? Because I've got them as a loser it's like they are a loser specifically for the NFL draft early entry deadline, but I am not going to call them an offseason loser if it includes getting Lincoln Riley, getting Alex Grinch, getting Caleb Williams, getting all these former Oklahoma commits or Oklahoma players, Mario Williams being the latest. So I am saying for this conversation exclusively that Drake Jackson, Drake London, Isaac Taylor Stewart, and Chris Steele are four very, very talented players with projections and prospect ratings that suggest that if they had all decided, like, hey, man, we love the hire. We love the way this is going. We want to stick around and be a part of it. Drake London, when healthy, is one of the best wide receivers in the entire country. Drake Jackson, one of the best pass rushers in the Pac-12. Taylor Stewart and Chris Steele, man, I feel like USC has just been pumping out off the top of my head, I think USC has been pumping out some underperforming defensive back talent for the last couple years.
I think that's fair.
And so sure. You know, if all those players played to their prospect ratings and decided to stick around, then USC would be talking about like, whoa, this is Lincoln is showing up. All he's got to do is get this thing rolling. So for this conversation exclusively, I've got USC as a loser because of losing those four players among others.
My next loser actually is Vatek. Have you seen all the guys that they're losing?
I have not, and I have been I've gotten too used to the fluidity of the Virginia Tech roster because of the way the Justin Fuente era went. Like I almost for Virginia Tech, even like pre-spring check-in, post-spring check-in, Virginia Tech was almost that like, yeah, send me the media guide. Then I'll believe that your roster is set. And even then, who knows?
I mean, they got some guys who were pretty good players for them. You know, Jermaine Waller, Trey Turner. They lose Mitchell to the draft. Amari Barno's gone. Blackshear, Hoffman, Tanuda. I mean, that for a team that has recruited poorly in recent years,
that's a lot
to lose. Yeah. All right. Early over under for you. Combined ACC wins for the Virginia schools next year, 5.5.
Over, because they both are in the Coastal and will get Duke and Georgia Tech. One of them's got to beat each other. So now we're at 3. And I think they can go get 3 more between the two of them.
Okay. But it made you think.
Yeah. Without a doubt. I was having to sit there and I was like, okay. You know, Virginia's cross division is Louisville, which, you know, who knows?
They do get Cunningham back.
Virginia Tech's, I think, is Boston College. Maybe that's an L. I don't know. I think that's as much of a coin flip, especially here in January.
Probably depends on where it is.
Yeah. I'll say over, because ultimately the bar that you need to reach, you need to be at least this high to ride this ride to win 2 ACC games, I think is low.
And they get 1 against each other.
Right.
So
I don't know. What's your read on it? Obviously, we just came up with it right here.
I think UVA might be really bad.
Oh,
like
0-8 type situation. 1-7.
I mean, I think their range is probably like 0-4. If they won 5 ACC games, I'd be fairly shocked.
Yes,
I mean, like they lose a lot of starting offensive linemen to the portal. You lose a lot of key skill guys. Defensively, they were really pretty bad. Concerned about, I don't think that's a good situation to be taking over.
Pitt probably coming back to earth a little bit. Miami.
So we talked about Pitt yesterday in our Slack chat on 24/7. Like, are they underrated or overrated? Like, I think that if you tell me they're 15th or 40th, I got no qualms with that. Like, there's a whole bunch of teams that.
That's because the difference between 15th and 40th is good luck.
Correct. 25 is an arbitrary number. Yeah. And like, oftentimes the difference in, like, in my ratings between like 15th and 40th is not that much.
Yeah. Brennan Armstrong landed where?
Where did he go? I thought he decided to stay. Back? Yeah.
Ooh. Gonna stick around for the, yeah, he's staying put for the beginning of the Tony Elliott era. All right. We'll see.
See how that works.
See how that works.
Do you count Michigan as a loser? Because Hutchinson obviously was a senior. So, like, he's one of those everybody knows he was going to go. They lose Dax Hill. They lose Ajabo. They lose Chris Henton. Those are some impact guys for them, for sure. But they don't lose a ton of guys. You know what I mean?
Right. So
they lose a lot of seniors, though.
The defense was built on seniors, graduate students, you know, a lot of names, including Hutchinson, that do not qualify for the early entry discussion. But I thought that Tom made a great point about Dax Hill on here, where he was so unique as a defender that it really allowed them to build their defense around, and not just him. I mean, having freaking Hutchison and Ajabo creates lots and lots of problems. But in terms of the way the back end of that Michigan defense worked, the versatility of Hill from that sort of nickelback position was important. And so I would agree with you that Michigan's a loser, especially if we expand the conversation beyond our limited parameters and say, look, Hill and Ajabo are underclassmen who have declared and are both studs. That is a loss. But also the rest of the defense, we only got like one or two starters back for the Wolverines defensively next year. So that is, it's something to keep an eye on, particularly as we reset Michigan for 2022.
For sure. I have a couple more.
Is that easy?
I think Purdue is easy, but needs to be said.
Needs to be said that if you lose the two surefire studs, the guy who your offense ran through and the guy who your defense, like basically every opponent for Purdue was double or triple teaming George Karloftis every time that I turned my eyes to it. So when you take those players out, it becomes much more difficult to run both your offense and your defense. Had to throw Purdue on here.
I debated throwing Kentucky on there, but I'm not going to. But losing Wandale is a big deal. I mean, if you saw the bowl game, that was kind of their offense. They also
David Bell-esque, you know?
Yeah. What I think I will throw on here, and I think a couple of these guys are actually just super seniors who decided they couldn't come back, or, you know, who decided to not come back. But you lose Breece Hall. You lose Mike Rose. You lose the D tackle. You get Will McDonald back. If you're Matt Campbell, I think you're very happy you signed that extension because, like, I think, quite frankly, that the 20 and 21 seasons were your window.
Just welcoming the Iowa State fights again.
But I might be on Iowa State this year. Like, doesn't this seem like the type of team that Matt Campbell's going to overachieve with?
Yes.
A bunch of guys who have been in this program who most of the college ball fans don't know their names, and Vegas sets their win total back down to like 5 and they exceed it. And
you know, if it's 5, I'm hammering over. I think that the not looking at the schedule.
That was hypothetical. Like I haven't done a projection on them, but yeah, you know what I mean? Like something low. Who do they play in 2022? This is kind of a fun exercise.
Because it's the Iowa State or Matt Campbell as a dog. Take it on a game-by-game principle. Matt Campbell as a dog versus Matt Campbell as a favorite. The splits speak for themselves.
Oh, they also get the thing where one of their road games is Kansas, which is always a big advantage in the Big 12 because like Kansas doesn't have much of a home field advantage, and you should beat Kansas. I think Kansas is still in that range where you should be beating them pretty much in your sleep, even if you're Iowa State, just based on how he's built the program up. The non-con is Ohio, Southeast Missouri, and of course at Iowa. And this is one of the years where they get 1, 2, 3, 4. They only have to play 4 conference road games, which means they get 5 conference home games. Remember, it alternates every other year in the Big 12. And one of those conference road games is Kansas. So the only 3 times that they're going to leave Iowa City at Texas.
Ames.
At Oklahoma State, I said Iowa City. I'm going to get some hate mail on that. At Texas, at Oklahoma State, at TCU. Oklahoma comes to town. West Virginia comes to town. Tech comes to town. Kansas State comes to town. Baylor comes to town. And Baylor comes to town early. So
yeah, I think that it is undoubtedly a loser based on the players that went. But you've got a good point here in terms of it's like when all the headlines are negative, this is when we buy in on the Iowa State train. And don't sweat that. I hope you don't get any hate mail. I was, 23 years old, just a year or two out of being at North Carolina, writing about Big Ten football, way out of my depth. And I said that the University of Iowa was in Des Moines. You know, I messed it up, learned via hate mail very, very quickly. And we got it corrected, thankfully. But I've learned since then.
I've seen him listed on 2 different lists, but I thought he was a senior. Is Perrion Winfrey, does he count as an underclassman going pro for Oklahoma? Because they lose Benito, they lose Winfrey is gone, but like I don't know, you know, what if he actually counted as an underclassman.
I don't. He was a senior for Oklahoma, okay, according to Oklahoma. In addition to, I mean, you know, coming out of JUCO, then you do 2 years. Seems like he's on track for the for being a traditional NFL draft entrant.
Makes sense.
Were you thinking about Oklahoma as a loser?
No, maybe a little bit, but I feel like there's a team we're going to need to have further discussion on when we do the portal show. I would think one team they have a lot of guys, but I don't know that they're like huge impact guys. Is Utah? They lose Britton Covey, they lose Nick Ford, they lose one of their tight ends, Cole Fortingham, Pledger, Nip Asul, one of the backers, and Tafua, one of the edge guys. Like, I still kind of like this team for next year.
Wow.
I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't.
So he was, this interesting, was classified by Utah as a junior, but he was a Senior Bowl invite and has 47 career games with 32 starts. So like Utah did the weird thing where they were already counting your COVID year for Devin Lloyd even prior to this.
Okay. So that's why some of these guys show up on these lists.
Yeah. So that's confusing. I feel so bad for everybody who had to put together these lists, because there's no way that you had all the right answers.
It used to just be Notre Dame, like, who, you know, lists like what year you are in school, not what year you are eligibility wise on their depth chart. And then Michigan just stopped putting out depth charts. And now it's some of these MAC schools, like, we don't even put out a spring roster anymore, which is really great. Like, good job promoting your program there, guys. But yeah, man, off-season roster bingo is very exciting to play. Do we have any update on who Miami's going to hire?
I was going to say, speaking of the MAC, all right, so we are sitting here recording for time purposes. We're sitting here recording on Wednesday. It's about 11:30 on the East Coast. And my unsourced, not reporting anything, but my read on the scenario is the two names that seem to have the most attention for Mario Cristobal's first offensive coordinator as head coach at Miami is Kendall Briles, who is currently the offensive coordinator at Arkansas and has been rising in the industry for a good bit of time now. And then the head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, who was promoted after Matt Campbell left and has done a pretty good job. You know, he's got Toledo always as one of the top three or four teams in the MAC, gets them to a bowl game with some regularity. But that would be, you talk about, you know, MAC football. That to me would be not an indictment of Toledo or MAC football, but notable to leave that job willingly to go become the offensive coordinator at Miami. Now, we don't know if he is going to do that or not, or if he was, you know, just entertained by the offer, but wow, that would be something if Toledo finds itself in a coaching search because its head coach just left to go be an offensive coordinator for a first year head coach in the ACC.
Haven't we seen this before? Didn't Dan Enos leave Central Michigan as head coach, or did he get fired
to go become the
Arkansas? He did. Yeah. In January 22nd of 15, Dan Enos resigned after getting his contract extension to go and be the OC at Arkansas for Bielema.
We have seen it before.
So I guess it has happened before. For the record, I think Jason Campbell is I think Candle is actually a pretty good play caller and would be a good hire, but apparently he's turned that down per reports. Kendall Briles, I don't think, has officially said anything. My guess is that's a move to get more money out of Arkansas, which would make some sense because they obviously gave Odom the big money extension. So I'm sure Briles would want one of his own. To me, the interesting thing is, okay, with what happened with Moorhead there, right? what Oregon was running a lot of times didn't look like what Moorhead normally wants to play. And it makes me wonder, like, we know that Mario Cristobal has the reputation as wanting to be very physically tough, and he's an offensive line guy, et cetera, et cetera. How much was he micromanaging what they were doing offensively at Oregon? Because it looked like they were trying to do a lot more, hey, get in bigger formations and pound the rock than Joe Moorhead is known for doing. I have a strong suspicion that Moorhead's offense will look a lot more like it looked at Penn State, Mississippi State, and then obviously now that he goes back to Akron to become their head coach, I think it's going to look a lot different than it did at Oregon. How much are other coaches out there noticing this and saying, Jomo's a pretty proven offensive mind. What Oregon was doing didn't always look like what Jomo is known for running. Like, does word get around in the industry as far as you being able to run what you want to run? I think Briles, by the way, would be a great fit down there. You have a quarterback who can chuck it deep in Tyler Van Dyke and throws the deep ball well. They were already running not the same system, but a somewhat similar system with what Lashley runs. It's obviously not the same, but like they use some of the wide splits that you're going to use with Briles. So I think Arkansas would likely keep him and should, but I do wonder how much of this offensive coordinator search is, I don't say being hampered, but how much has it been influenced by what you saw with Joe Moorhead there at Oregon?
So I'm not defending Mario Cristobal's influence or non-influence, but I do think that it is important context to look at the pass catchers from the 2021 Oregon team.
For sure.
And then I just pulled up 2016 Penn State, because we're always going to hold 2016 Penn State as like the gold standard of the Joe Moorhead offense. And he had Chris Godwin, Mike Gesicki, Deshaun Hamilton, and Saquon Barkley as skilled options. And that's
those
just
guys are in the NFL, I think. Yes. For maybe Hamilton. Is Hamilton in the league?
I do not know if he is in the league right now, but I just mentioned three starters in that group. Compare that to Devin Williams, Chris Hudson, Travis Dye, Johnny Johnson. I mean, it's just there is a, in terms of the who you are dealing with for the pass catching element of trying to RPO this thing, I just think that Penn State offense had so many more weapons that A, were able to do more when you got them the ball and able to get the ball more, and then B, just the threat that they posed continued to make things a little bit more difficult. Saquon Barkley, Travis Dye. Travis Dye is great in transfer portal, but you know, those are the things that I think I would say to defend the allegations of Cristobal influence, is that, you know, even in the meeting room, whether it's Cristobal, whether it's Moorhead, whether it's someone else on that staff, you're like, I mean, look, what do you want us to do? We've got a great offensive line. This is the best. This is our best chance at success.
Yeah, I mean, I can certainly see that. By the way, producer Jordan says Hamilton is in the league still with the Broncos. So to further your point there, I would also say I thought Jomo did a great job at Fordham. I mean, he took over a team that won one game, and then I think his final 2 years they won what, 10 wins, and the second biggest turnaround in the FCS in 2012, and obviously like it. I think the guy's a proven offensive play caller, and this is just – I'm confident that there is some of this out there based on, I think, the expectations that are now at Oregon, seeing what Oregon did last year. And I think a new Oregon staff is probably pretty excited about what they can do relative to what they did in 2021.
Well, what about then the Miami side of this? If I'm a Miami fan listening to this, and I just saw Tyler Van Dyke be the ACC Offensive Freshman of the Year and look really good as the leader of this passing attack, am I concerned about whether Miami is going to be in a position where it is not maximizing skill position talent on the outside and the passing game? And if so, like, is that something that is a red flag, or at least something you're keeping an eye out for?
I think they'll get somebody. You know, also, it's not like Miami's offensive line right now is known for pounding people. So they weren't pounding people last year. You kind of, I think, have to play to your strengths, as you mentioned. I think they'll get somebody, and we'll get somebody good. And obviously, Van Dyke's pretty damn talented. They do lose Rambo, but they're bringing in some guys. I imagine they'll get somebody good. It's just, you know, what does he want to be? Also, Kendall and Browse are
different,
pretty vastly different, as is Joe Brady. It's not like you're just picking off guys who all run very similar stuff. I mean, this, the public search seems kind of grab baggish. Like, what do you believe in? What can an offensive coordinator expect to be able to be allowed to run?
Just really seems like a too many cooks in the kitchen situation down there. And that's good for things to talk about because it's interesting. Good for business. Let's go. Anything else stand out? Again, we'll be meeting back 11 a.m. on Thursday with a live mailbag. So plenty of opportunities to jump in on that. But anything else you got your eye on before we get out of here?
I've been scanning my news column for TweetDeck. Not really seeing anything super breaking right now, which means as soon as we hit stop, we will see something pretty. There's a Tom Brady Tuck Rule documentary coming out of 30 for 30. So really excited to watch that and watch more Tom Brady content. Yeah, let me see here. David Hale, our buddy who covers the ACC for ESPN, was putting out some interesting first down yard rush differential stuff. So I guess that's probably too nerdy and also not great content for a podcast.
For a podcast.
Which means I'm basically tapped.
He is Bud Elliott. You can follow him on Twitter at BudElliott3. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Bud, thank you very much.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.